Hi, and welcome to another episode of Through the Web, where we talk all things business, technology, and internet. I'm Dagogo.
And I'm Tosif.
And I'm Brayden.
And I guess we have to first start by saying sorry to our listeners, because we've been quite irregular.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. Unfortunately, this time it was my turn to get sick. So, I've been on the mend.
Should I say the tagline that I said, how we put the cold in cold fusion?
Said it now.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So, you've been a little under the weather.
Yes, that's true. I had a raging sore throat that turned into just industrial production of phlegm.
Oh, God.
Blocked ears, and then a really bad cough that's like
still there.
Yeah,
but yeah, you can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, like literally just before I thought I was okay, but the nose is flocking up again, but that's all right. Also just kind of made me think that I've been seeing a lot of people that have been getting perpetually sick. It's all around here in the studio, but other people as well. So I just did a online search on Reddit. And there's so many posts of people like from 2022, 2023 saying, has anyone else been getting just perpetually sick? So it's like a global thing.
Yeah. Apparently.
So yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Well, hopefully it's nothing sinister.
Let's hope not.
So what have you been up to, Brayden?
Not much this week. Catching up on editing. I watched Ahsoka. Have you watched
that? Oh, the Star Wars thing?
Yeah, I managed to find some time to watch through the whole show. I was waiting for it to finish.
Okay.
And I don't know. All the reviews are saying it's like they don't like it. But I think out of everything Star Wars has done in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, I think this is the best.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know. Did you guys ever watch like the animated shows, you know, Clone Wars and Rebels?
I've got zero minutes of Star Wars watched in my time.
You? Right. Negative.
Same. Yeah. Negative. Yeah. So you actively just go out and like.
Just, I don't know how.
I don't know how. Yeah, just actively.
But yeah, nothing. So maybe you can enlighten us.
Yeah. Well, it was. They brought back all these characters from the animated shows that only the guys who were like super super into Star Wars paid attention to.
Oh.
And so it was pretty cool. They went down a path of like the lore that they just haven't done in live action before. So it was pretty cool.
So that kind of explains the discrepancy maybe. So people that don't know about those characters may not feel as strongly about it. Perhaps.
Yeah, well that's the thing, is a lot of people don't think they really know what's going on, or they don't know the history or the context of half of the characters. But
sounds like a fan service kind of thing. Like those who are into it like would really enjoy it.
I think maybe that was potentially one of the things that led to some negative reviews, is that you don't actually know who any of these people are. You've never got any context before unless you watched those shows, because they've never been mentioned otherwise. But I kind of hope they continue down that path. Maybe they can give some context like in the second season for people who haven't watched it. But like, I think it's way more interesting than anything that Mandalorian's done, Boba Fett did. Obi-Wan was a massive letdown. This is like, I think it's got the best potential.
Well, what are your thoughts on things being remade over and over again? Like, there's been, in fact, just this week I saw this, I think it was an article or just some sort of a post about how a lot of people are tired of just lack of originality. Like, everything's just part two or prequel or sequel of other successful things that happened in the past. Well, do you feel the same?
Like, oh, yeah, of course. But even with music as well, there's a lot of sampling and whatever from old stuff. But I think that for the film side of things, it makes sense. It's a safe bet. Like, you've already got this brand and IP built up. All you have to do is just, like, remix a little bit or add a little bit more story, and then you have people that are at least, you know what it is, so that they're more inclined to watch, especially if it has the component of nostalgia. That's like a big driver. And then, but I think maybe the tide's turning and people are like, oh, we've, you know.
Because apparently Top Gear was like the highest grossing film of, not Top Gear, fuck.
I was like, what? There's a Top Gear movie?
Top Gun.
Right.
Of last year, which says something, is that people were, and I think people do long a little bit for nostalgia, but it just seems like there's just too much of it sometimes.
Yeah, I heard an interesting analysis on Top Gun in the way of it being just a straight modernist film instead of like all the postmodern, because usually films nowadays, they have like a lot of twists and there's like some crazy, some kind of political statement or something they want to make within it. It's got all these extra things, but Top Gun is just like straight just movie. Straight and people were just missing
get on
that.
The plane, just yeah.
get the bad guys with the hero. Like, that's it. Yeah. So there's probably something to be said about that as well. But speaking of movies, I actually did see one recently called The Creator. I don't know if you've heard about that.
I've heard. It just sounds very familiar. Yes. I've seen some headlines.
It's basically about a future human battle with an AI race, essentially. And they're AI robots, but obviously ultra realistic. They look like humans. But you can tell they're robots because like half their head is like mechanical. But just the fact, just kind of the, I don't want to give anything away, but just like analyzing the relationship between robots and humans in the future, and who really is the good person, who's really is the good side, and who's the bad side, and yeah, it was kind of interesting. Yeah,
cool.
And that was original, so that was
good. Worth watching.
If you're into that kind of stuff, yeah, I'd say.
Cool.
Yeah.
But I guess in the start of the podcast episode today, obviously, if people haven't been aware, they are by now, of the terrible tragedy and the insane loss of lives in the Israel-Palestine situation. So as a tech podcast, we're not going to go into the geopolitical side of things or the nitty-gritty, but in the past we have covered how news gets around on social media, and especially in events like this and of the scale. We discussed how, you know, with AI coming into the horizon, with Twitter becoming X, and with the community notes and whatnot, how people would consume news from the ground, and of course, you know, all the things that come through the fog of war at the end of the day, right? So I guess we will touch a little bit on that side of things, on how we've been getting some of the news and what we've been seeing on social media. So I'm just going to start off with you, Diogo. What have you been seeing, and what have been your thoughts in terms of the news, the misinformation, slash disinformation, and whatnot?
Well, I guess I don't want to go into too much detail on what I've seen, but I guess in general, there have been a mix of legitimate reporting and then a lot of misinformation as well.
Yeah.
And the misinformation comes in a few different forms, one of which is just showing videos that seem to represent something, but they're from years ago or just something completely different. And people are saying, this is what's happening. And usually that would take a long time to kind of sift through and recognize that it's not as it seems, but I think the community notes are doing a good job there. But the other side of things I've seen is certain posts that have had community notes put under them, but then they've been changed and retracted because basically there was more information that came to light and there was more detail that had to be disseminated there. And in those situations, it's quite hard to know what is real and what isn't. But I don't think any social media platform could do a better job, in my opinion anyway. I think the community notes are still a good thing.
Yeah, I'd say so as well. But at the end of the day, I think it's still been difficult to get, at least from behind a screen, because, you know, that's literally the only way I hear from, you know, and then you from Australia with zero connections to the region. Like, there's no other way for us to get that news, right?
Yeah.
In the past, we'd wait for the news to go online. It's not online, sorry. I mean, the TV stations, the radio stations, and the newspapers the day after. But right now, with everything happening, obviously, in a millisecond, the disinformation is also, or the misinformation is also provided to us in that time. But
I'll just say another thing before that. Like, that's the online side of things. What I'm going to say is still online, but I've been actually following Channel 4 a lot and their coverage, because every day they've had like maybe a half an hour to 1 hour piece of people that are on the ground in Palestine or Israel, and they're just interviewing people and seeing their thoughts and whatnot. And I find that helpful as well, just to get a more rounded view instead of someone who's thought about something and it probably has an agenda and posting that online, and that's all you see. So I think it's healthy to balance that out as well. But go on.
Yeah, and I think we've kind of seen that similar with the, you know, during the Ukraine-Russia conflict and in other cases as well over the last few years. But with the community notes side of things, the one thing I'll touch is they have been good, but I think the idea that they're being retracted, or sometimes when I'll see like a screenshot of a post with community notes underneath it, but then when I'd go and check the actual tweet or the post, it wouldn't have the community notes under it, right? So that tells me like a lot of people would then just be sharing the screenshot that initially appeared, thinking like that was, you know, true or false, whatever the community notes said at that time. But then because it's retracting it, nobody's going to go back and check the original post. They'll only be seeing the screenshot of it. So again, I think, I don't know if it's a fundamental issue in how we consume content, we're getting, which we can never fix.
Yeah, it's like we're getting as close to... we're hitting up against a wall. It's like, what else can you really do? I was just going to say, like, no one can really know what is true with current technology and everything that we have, like, forgetting some red, like, blockchain verification thing in the future. Like, what we have now is just literally a JPEG image or a PNG image, and we have to determine if that's real or not using sources that, you know, people have. And I think that's just the best.
Yeah, because even when people are asking for evidence, you know, sometimes they say, you know, something has happened, and somebody underneath would comment and show me an evidence. And ultimately, I don't know what that does, because even if you quote unquote show evidence, you could easily say, oh, it's not from this, or and so ultimately it just keeps going back and forth, right? So that conversation never really ends. And one thing I mentioned, you know, a few episodes ago is you know, how you said that the community notes were very good, which I agreed to at the time, but I also said that we'll see how well it can cope at times of war, at times of, you know, dire situations. And then I think this is where we are seeing that how it's coping, or at least trying to cope in a lot of ways. So I would say it's mostly okay, but it's also working over time, because initially when Elon came on X, he fired a lot of, or got rid of a lot of the content moderation team. So now they have to work overtime to get that sorted. And Linda, I think, also said that she is forming a task force to help care of that. But just for comparison, this is something I found out on Wall Street Journal, is that through content moderation, X has to take around 8,900 decisions per day. And this is as of last week when the whole news broke out in the region, and Facebook has to take 415,000. So it's almost like,
but they have a lot more users,
bigger platform, I guess therefore more content, but that also says the scale at which I guess where you'd see more of this misinformation or disinformation appear, right? And also if you think of different languages, different regions, different cultures, honestly, it's going to be very, very difficult to really contain, because even when you show, and I've seen that with Twitter as well, when even there was a community post, there were people saying underneath that the community post is wrong, or the community note is wrong, right? So again, I think there's something fundamentally difficult fundamentally, I don't know what's the right word, wrong? It's probably not the right word, but...
Fundamentally broken about the way we
broken.
Receive.
Yeah, that's right. That's the perfect word in how we consume this kind of news and who we trust.
It's kind of like, we are hitting up against that fundamental wall, but it's... I just don't know what else you can do. The best thing you can do is get a task force of experts or well-informed people to the best of their ability to try and disseminate what is true or not.
That was meant to be the quote-unquote independent fact checkers, but then you look at who these independent fact checkers were, who they were funded by, all that kind of stuff, then also opens up new cans of worms. So, obviously this is a horrifying situation, and just how, you know, we've been consuming the news has been quite, I guess, eye-opening in some ways. One thing I will say is...
I just had a bit of an idea, but, you know, some people may or may not like the BBC, but you know how they have the thing like BBC Verify?
I actually don't know.
Okay. Well, it's just it's an internal system and process that they have to make sure that what the picture is what it says it is, and et cetera. So they have their contacts and their sources. So I think it could be useful for X to try and maybe bolt that on. So so they're not working from scratch. Like, they have already a media organization that has people on the ground, that has contacts and things like... I think that's something like that could help. Because I have... Sorry. Oh, I was just going to say, because I have been seeing under the community notes, people arguing about it, and then others coming in saying, oh, like BBC Verify said it was true, and because of this, 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 and this. And it's like, oh, okay. So I don't know. I think it could be helpful, but that's just a random...
Yeah, I think the trouble with that is obviously...
Do you trust the BBC?
Do you trust the BBC? Yes. And if not, then somebody else will post something else. It's like, I don't know if it's Al Jazeera or something else. And they're like, oh, do you trust that as well?
But it's right? like, so, you probably need a range of them.
And that's what I mean. And that's what I guess, and there's not a ad slot, but Ground News in a lot of ways have been trying that, where they showcase... you know, it's an app that says, you know, where the news source is coming from, and if they're leaning where they're towards funded, certain, where the funding is coming from. And
I think that, well, that's a good point. I think that's, you know, this isn't a sponsored slot, but I think that's very powerful because, well, I don't know. It's almost like you can make up your own mind, but is that a good thing? But then again, like, you're seeing everything. It's like, oh, if one side is saying this and it's heavily funded by this particular group, it's like, oh, maybe that's not what... You know,
I'm smiling because even with Ground News, there were comments of how people, like, how there were not, like, how do they rank some things right and some things left, and how some people deemed the people that, or the organization that Ground News deemed as center to be right or left, or more leaning towards right or left, right? So
it just keeps going, right?
So, and again, that's where I feel like there's something fundamentally broken in how we consume news. But I was just going to say that there was this one thing that I did notice is, you know, I actually expect a lot more AI propaganda.
But there's
been some, but not to the degree that I was fearing that there would be.
Right.
The reason perhaps, you know, like, people probably find it easier, you know, those who want to spread wrong information, to just, you know, look at something that already exists, take it out, put it out of context.
What was the artist? Oh, yeah. So there was a famous post of people running away at a festival you know, it was a whole bunch of chaos. But it turned out it was like a Bruno Mars concert from like 2018 or something. Yeah. And people were like, oh, this is horrible.
Yeah, and obviously, and there's all other things as well where, you know, there's so many examples, and that's the thing that we can go on and go into the specifics. But I don't know if you saw, but Justin Bieber posted a thing as well where it turned out to be the wrong region. Yeah. And then deleting it, and that's the thing. Like things like that, for example, it really showcases how people really consume it and spread the news. But maybe it's just
a fact of, we're in our day and age, we're so impatient, so we expect news to be delivered instantly and that news to all be correct. Yeah. But maybe just in a war and literal military confrontation situation, we have to just wait. Wait a while for the truth to come out. We just may not know.
The best thing that I found out is, you look at, like, whatever you think is the opposing viewpoint, go to the source for that opposing viewpoint and try to understand what they're saying. Mm. And whatever you think is supporting your viewpoint, look into that as well. Look what's something in the middle. Like, that's literally the only way to be the most informed person in this day and age, and I honestly don't see any other way, because somebody said in the past, like, the truth is somewhere in the middle, and I think that's the closest to truth you can get, even though it's not the truth all the time. So, as you mentioned, this we are living in a post-truth world in a lot of ways.
Yeah. That's true.
That's true.
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know anymore.
All right, so switching gears to some more tech-related news, the Google Pixel update. Google launched the Pixel 8 lineup following many months of leaks. The Pixel 8 and 8 Pro are a little bit different now. Faster processors, better cameras, and some AI software. Alongside the phones, we got the Pixel Watch 2, which has a more advanced sensor array, and the updated Pixel Buds as well. They have conversation detection, so it can automatically put you into transparency mode.
So you're looking to change.
It didn't sell me.
It didn't sell you?
No.
Why not?
Mainly because I don't like the way it looks.
It's the last thing I would have expected from you, a man of tech.
Yeah. No, but I don't know, just the back of it's a bit...
Do you mind just showing your current Samsung phone just the way it looks first?
Nah. that is, yeah, admittedly a minor thing, but there's nothing really wrong with it. Like the photos, apparently, that it takes are very good, but... Video mode is good as well, like compared to other Android phones, but I still think the iPhone, it outdoes it in that department in terms of video, which I really find important for me. That's right. Like one of my number one priorities. But yeah, as for all the smart stuff inbuilt, I think it's amazing. Like from the souped up magic eraser tool to the different face poses that you can do on different photos, and also some of the voice isolation stuff that I've heard, that's very cool. But I don't know, for some reason, on a very purely emotional level, it didn't draw me in. So next year, guys,
like, it's still iPhone, for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. What do you think, Brandon, of the reveal?
Now that I'm in the Apple ecosystem, I just can't.
Oh, God.
For now, I can't see myself going back.
You know what I feel like right now? I feel like I'm in like a room where you're the only survivor and everyone else is just zombies.
Then we've been taken over.
You've been taken over by the Apple, yes.
Like some of the AI stuff's cool. Some of the noise isolation and stuff, that stuff's really cool. But I don't know. I feel like it's a back and forth at the moment. Like Apple will follow and update theirs, and then Google, they'll release something and Google will copy them, and it'll just go back and forth. But yeah, I think I'd buy a 15 Pro over the Pixel, even though it costs more. That the video looks insane. Which is, like you said, I probably use that more than most phone features. I can see why people like it. I think if you're already in the Google ecosystem, like, it's probably an obvious upgrade, but yeah, not enough to change me.
I can see you got a...
No, I've got my Pixel. I'm a Pixel head. I don't know if there's a word for it.
So another thing is the battery life. Like, the battery life in the Pixels is known to kind of after a while. And I gave my dad's Pixel... I mean, my dad, my old Pixel 4, I think. And I was over at my parents' place like a few weeks ago. And he comes home and is like... Yeah, my phone's behaving really weirdly. The battery just seems not to be reading. Like it goes like from like 50 to 20 to zero, and it's just like acting all weird. And he takes his case off, and literally the back of the phone is blown out, and there's this big battery that's bulging. And I'm like, you don't charge that again. You could, like, that thing could explode.
Yeah.
But so I just know Pixel batteries over time just get a bit weird.
But I think Pixel 4 is like what would have been maybe 2019
is when I got it.
Four years now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So bulging is like when you leave your phone for like a decade or more. Yeah. That should not be happening to
an
active
4-year-old
phone.
I agree. Yeah.
And I've known one of my good friends, he has had two Pixels and had battery issues with it as well.
Okay.
So it's like, it's just that risk I don't want to take.
Yeah, I've never had any issues with batteries specifically for Pixels, as far as I remember.
How's your battery life though in general?
Not bad. Runs a day kind of thing. I wouldn't say I'm the heaviest user.
Yeah.
Because most of my stuff's texting and maybe watching, small videos and stuff like that. I don't spend a lot of time with watching longer videos or Netflix or whatever. So for me, the consumption is very okay. But yeah, I'm on 6 XL now. I don't think I'll upgrade to the 8 still. But I think there's a few of the camera features that does seem quite enticing. So I'm a bit kind of like, in the middle right now. And maybe the Bard
integration
to the system. But I think I'm going to get that anyway. So I'll just see how that plays out. And if...
Wait, sorry. Speaking of AI and voice... Finally got it. The ChatGPT audio, how it talks to you. So the TTS, text-to-speech, amazing. The best I've ever heard on anything, ever, bar none. Like, it's so good. Like, I'm not joking. But the thing is, there's a delay. So when you say something, it waits and thinks, and then waits and thinks for its reply. So it's maybe about 5 seconds. And I think if they could get rid of that, it would be something special. But I think that's the only thing that's holding it back at the moment. But it just the intonation of the voices, it's just so natural. It's like, yeah, it's great.
Is there an OpenAI app? Or
yes, only on the app you can get it.
Oh, only
on
the app itself. Yes. Right.
And you have to be a premium. Oh, okay. Thing. You have to be a premium member as well.
I pay for GPT-4 things. It's the same thing, right?
Yeah. Okay. So if you go to lab settings and then click on, there's a slider and whatnot. So it's pretty cool.
Okay, so just one small step away from the perfect assistant?
All they have to do is just reduce that delay. Maybe that's extremely difficult, I don't know. But then that would be the perfect assistant. Yeah.
Okay, well.
We're almost there.
Almost there. Now, I do have another topic to cover related to AI. And the thing is, I've been hearing that, obviously, over the last, it's almost a year now, I would say, since the whole ChatGPT, the AI stuff, you know, came to the scene. And we have some data now in terms of how they're performing and how the companies are performing and whatnot. But one thing that's been put forth, the idea is that it's difficult to make money with AI companies. Mm. And it's been the case for a lot of these companies who are struggling to, I guess, not so much make money yet, but more so how to package the apps or the software for consumption. So obviously you've got the basic model, which is like, you know, you pay X amount of money per month to get access to that. But it's, for example, OpenAI is still okay right now because they got a lot of, you know, investment through Microsoft.
Yeah.
But then if you're looking at a lot of the other companies, so for example, Copilot under Microsoft itself, apparently if you pay $30 a month to get that, Adobe's Firefly, which is also, you know, I think got introduced in the Adobe Max event a few weeks ago. You have to pay through credits, and it's not cheap to get that. And if you lose the credit, they'll throttle the performance through a cheaper server, because that's how they're going to save money. So it's like the amount of money it takes to build these large language models and run them on this massive scale is actually costing a ton of money for these companies. So,
and that's kind of where I agree with Sam Altman when he said in the future, it's not going to be all these different companies running their own servers and creating language models. It's just going to be a company just purchases a language model, tweaks a little bit towards their profession and goes, because that's going to be a lot cheaper. Like, building these things are extremely expensive. It's like building the ground pipeline to the internet. It's not like every internet company is not going to do that. But I'm just seeing here that OpenAI's revenue went from $28 million in 2022 and is now $1.3 billion this year.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think they're doing all right.
So I guess for them, again, like OpenAI would just put like a very specific use case because they have a lot of investment.
Mm.
It's
not the norm. Yeah.
And they're also like the first player in the industry. They're working with a lot of businesses, B2B cases. But in general, I'm thinking, even as you mentioned, because it's expensive, the other problem that you'll see is only the big tech companies will be the big
players. Expected.
It's the big four or five.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
I'm still waiting to see what Apple does. Like, I know they have something that they just, because they, you know, they've created that voice cloning thing for disabilities and there's a few other AI things going on, but they just haven't, I think they're just doing that waiting game again, seeing what other companies do and they're just coming in and doing it their own way. So I just have my eye on what's going to happen with that. But yeah, again, that's still one of the big tech companies that's doing
this, exactly. But they still have been very quiet about it, which is, like, I get it in the first event where they didn't mention AI at all. Like, okay, that's fine. But we're in Techtober now. They're with the headset coming out in January, is it? Would it be January, Brayden, when they...
think so.
Yeah, so early next year, I think it would be. So we're not that far away.
I think they're just going to not do anything for a while. They're just going to sit on it, keep improving it. They're going to make sure it's to the T before they release it. Because if the AI, if it say it's a text-to-speech model or something and the AI starts spouting off certain things, nothing would be worse for brand like for a brand like Apple. So I think they're going to be extremely careful.
Yeah. And I guess in the middle of all this with the Quest 3, it seems like they're getting a bit of, you know, mostly positive review, as we mentioned in the last episode. But also it seems like a lot of the demos that's been coming out in terms of how people are using it also seems quite positive. There was this video I saw, you know, those, if you were to learn a piano, you know, those bars that mm-hmm. would come up, the different colors.
Yep.
You can just wear the Quest 3 now and it lays out on your actual piano.
Yeah.
In like real life.
Right.
And then you can just play it as it comes out.
Right.
On,
right.
Which is like very cool. Maybe you can just add that video.
I still haven't seen much of it, but yeah, like the, I guess, ambient awareness I have of it is quite positive. And I think, yeah, it's going to be a good thing for VR in general. Maybe this is the one that gets people to get into it. But then again, it depends on how comfortable it is and how heavy it is. Because for those first-time users, it's, you know, it could do all this cool stuff, but if it's too clunky and cumbersome and there's that barrier of entry, then yeah, it's not gonna, they're not gonna come back to it. So it's kind of how I feel about the PSVR actually. It'll be interesting to see. And I think Zuckerberg has a lot of plans for this, like from his metaverse to integrating this into Facebook somehow. Like, you know, it'll be interesting.
Have you been seeing the avatars of the?
I have.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, the scared ones, or is it something else?
No, the chatbot, AI chatbot,
celebrity
chatbot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the one that blew up was the Kendall Jenner video where people weren't sure if it was her or not. Did you see that video, Braden?
Yeah.
So I'm still not sure. Was it her or was it like the AI version of her? Because if it was the AI version of her, game over.
Well, yeah, I've been hearing it was just her on her phone.
People thought it was her though, so yeah. I don't know.
Because like they got her in a studio, like all these celebrities in the studio for like 5-6 hours or something. So they must
like millions of dollars.
So there must have been some training going on, but I don't think that video was AI.
It was AI specifically. Wrong. Yeah. But the examples of the demos that they showed, they're very similar as well. So it's gonna be interesting on that front.
Yeah. Okay. So. What's your prediction? Do you think people are going to use that? Like, we're talking about the texting celebrities and having them reply with an AI version of their likeness.
I think a certain age group will. Okay. I think the whole idea of this, if I were to get into Zuck's head, is how do you get younger people adoption and get used to the offerings or the AI offerings of the company. Celebrities have a big pull. Like, imagine all the young Mr. Beast fans, and that's why all the celebrities are you know, the selected based on that, not like some older, you know, like Tom Cruise is in there, for example, right? It's just Mr. Beast and Kendall Jenner and Tom Brady.
But do you, in the recesses of the far reaches of your mind, do you have any concerns about bolstering more parasocial relationships?
You'll be able to answer that better because you're working on a video about the loneliness epidemic.
Yes. Well, I have a big fear about that. Like,
so do you, like through your research. By the way, the video comes out mm-hmm. hopefully this week, end of this week. So, mm-hmm. Through the research that you've been doing for this video, and this was not a planned segue, by the way.
No.
It sounded very cool. but did you find anything out of it that gave you that idea that okay, you know, it does seem like that.
As in, people will have more parasocial relationships, yes. So Generation Z, it's like 75% of them feeling lonely. Mm. And it's getting to the stage, there's a 2022 study of young people in the UK where they don't know how to, they feel like they don't know how to make friends at all. And it's a thing where adding digital companionship, yes, maybe in the short term could help, but it could end up being a crutch. And it's just people, like, I don't know, it's hard on both sides because it seems like people are more closed off and it's harder to connect and reach to people. But, and you have this thing that could help people maybe learn how to talk, but then going outside becomes harder and harder and meeting people becomes harder and harder until you end up in this place where no one, it's easier to talk to Mr. Beast than, than make a new friend. It's just so much easier to do that. So, I would love for it to be this great thing that helps everyone, but I think there's a consequence that we have to think about. So where do you think the loneliness epidemic started, or how, or like really kicked off?
I mean, loneliness isn't a new concept for sure, right? I think people have always felt, to some degree, a bit of...
Well, you've read the script, haven't you?
No.
Oh, okay. Go on.
Well, a little bit, yeah, because of the...
The intro. Yeah. Okay, yeah, go on.
But it wouldn't be, you know, a new concept, right? Because there are poems, there are... Like, I remember reading, you know, poems when I was a kid of people talking about loneliness and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely been there. And I think technology would have just amplified it a little bit more in some ways, where people might think that, you know, I can just stay indoors and whatnot.
If you were to have a guess, where do you think it started kicking up? When?
So I would say it probably started kicking off maybe the mid-1900s.
Okay. There was a progression as industrialization came. People, generally started feeling a bit more lonely, but it was still okay. There was still community and whatnot. Where it really started kicking off was actually the 1960s and 70s. Okay. So due to a lot of things, there was a poor economic situation. There was a lot of crime, etc., blah, blah, blah. But what ended up happening was the baby boomer generation came of age. And what that meant was there was a lot of competition for everything. Everyone, like, you'd walk into a job, there was like 400 other people that wanted it versus like 10 years ago when there was no one.
Yeah.
So all of these people, all, you know, there was like so much pressure to be an individual. And what ended up happening was people turned inwards, and sometimes people call it the me generation at that time. And there was a focus on individuality. And there's a lot of anthropologists and demographers that cite that as the beginning of the individualistic mindset, which actually led to loneliness. So that was the bedrock. And then we had Generation X and the millennials, and we just grew up in that thinking it was normal, but it wasn't the way that society kind of was. So after that, then it kind of just accelerated big time with obviously social media and Generation Z. They got the worst end of the deal because algorithms and curated feeds of what they want is basically the most individualistic tool ever created. So it goes to show that, you know, it doesn't take much to know what happened after that. And then, of course, there was the pandemic, which was the big hockey stick moment. It has been quite a slow bit. But, yeah, the 60s and 70s was actually the bedrock of, like, modern loneliness. So I thought that was interesting in my findings in that episode.
And I guess ultimately, you know, that the point of social media and the internet in a lot of ways was to connect people, right? So has that increased, because if it's also increasing as well, is there some somewhat of a, I guess almost like a rebuttal to that, you know, there's a group of people who are perhaps getting more lonely, but then there's another group of people who would have been lonelier if it wasn't for that community aspect of the internet. Is there any studies around that?
That's a good... Yes, actually. I'm not sure if it's specifically on loneliness, but I know it's on mental health and it probably overlaps somewhat. Mm. But in terms of social media usage, it starts off like this. Like, a little bit of social media usage is good, like up to like half an hour, 1 hour. Mm. But then the more you go, like, the worse it gets. So it's like there's like an optimum amount. So
I think that makes perfect sense because... Yeah. Through personal experience, I can attest to that. Like, that actually makes sense for me on a personal level.
Yeah.
Like, if I use it just the right amount, I'm feeling okay. Any more, it's just, I think, it is bad for mental health for sure.
Yeah. So, it's one of those things, and fixing this issue is quite hard. Like, because it was always kind of a... underground current of a feeling, but now it's brought right up to the forefront because it's so obvious now. And it's almost, I'm not going to say too late, but it's quite hard to undo a lot of these ingrained patterns in society. It's quite a big challenge to get to the bottom of. But I think the first step is talking about it and acknowledging it. And that's starting to be done in a big way now. So not sure if it can come from the top down through government policy or each of us doing an individual part, but I think we're on the first steps of trying to deal with it, which I think is good.
What's the solution to all this?
There's quite a few. So obviously reaching out, whether to friends or family or professional help. Mm-hmm. Also, actually serving others is what's been cited as quite a good way to combat that, because it shows us that we have value to add to society rather than just sitting inwards and dealing with it. But also practicing gratitude. So you may feel like, you know, nothing's going right, but if you really think about it, that you're alive, you're in relatively good health, maybe without a blocked nose, but you know, maybe you have a roof over your head. Those kinds of things can actually help bolster feelings of you know, positivity, that there's something to live for.
These are sort of the things that I usually see within the CEO motivational circuits. Oh, where all the motivational stuff when I used to, you know, read some self-help books.
Yeah.
They used to say things like, oh, just wake up, get some sunlight in your eyes, write a page of things that you're grateful for. And things like that. And a lot of the times, you know, they get quite dunked on the internet. It's like, oh, typical, you know. But I do think that they do have some part
like
to play.
I think if you do that seriously with the right mindset, it can help. But yeah, I know it sounds like a diatribe if you just, you know. But there's some other interesting findings I found when researching. There was a UK study that had 500,000 participants, and it was the link between your economic wealth and loneliness. Mm. So as it turns out, if you go from earning £100,000 down to £18,000, it's the same equivalent loneliness as a quarter of a death of a spouse, and half as much as a divorce.
Oh wow!
So economics and loneliness are
of course,
are very interlinked, and a lot of people don't really realize that. And that's another thing that's going on. Obviously, the economic situation's a lot of people taking up second jobs, third jobs. They just are struggling to get by. And apart from not having the time to meet other people and make connections, it just is a drain on mental health as well. And it's literally like, a link between the two. So I found that quite interesting as well.
When I asked you about the solutions, most of the solutions were based on individual situations, right? Mm-hmm. Like you think about something, you do something, but I think there's also a societal and a communal change that needs to be made, right? Yeah. In a lot of ways, because like just the other day, I was watching this TikTok video of this guy in Barcelona, and I think it was either an American living there or something like that, where he was comparing how the community behaves every day after around like the late afternoon, end of the day, work day kind of situation, where there's like these little kind of courtyards or pockets of spaces within the town where he's in Barcelona, and it'll just be like people around the neighborhood will just come meet there, you know, the adults will be, you know, having like a bit of snacks and the kids will be playing around. And it's just like this vibrant kind of
local. Can you send me that?
I'll send that to you. Hopefully I can find it. But and he was saying how in America he's never seen that, and it's just impossible to even fathom of, you know, there are little small parks.
So you're talking about infrastructure, actually.
Infrastructure within the community, yes. Right? That promotes the idea of social bonding across, you know, people within the vicinity. Not just, you know, events or something, but just a day-to-day interaction that happens with people around the same block, right? So things like that, I think, definitely has a big, big part to play.
So the general, what's the guy? The health general guy for the US, Vivek Murphy, who declared the loneliness epidemic in 2017. He was saying that there's this thing that there's one Japanese community, I can't remember which place it was, but it's called Mori, I think. And essentially what it is people that have been friends since maybe 5 years old, they keep in contact like every week. They meet up in different spaces and places. And if they can't, like they video call, etc. And there are people that have been friends for over 100 years. Mm. And this particular place has the highest life expectancy. It's like not uncommon for people to live over 100 years. And it's just that simple fact of just not letting those connections go. Mm. Like just keep talking to those friends. And they have discussions about life and problems and, you know, just like really good conversations. And you said, you know, it's harder maybe if you've gotten older in life and lost those connections, but if you're young and still have the chance, just mm. definitely keep them, because it's not only good for your mental health, but your physical health as well. It just goes to show. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's also because they were able to maintain those friendships because they were able to have a lot of common grounds, right? Mm. Now, if you're not out there meeting people, if you're not out there doing things with people of either similar age bracket or similar areas, because you are more indoors, you know, on your screen. And then even when you're on your screen, your algorithm is so specific to you serving things that you, you know, like in something I've mentioned in the past, you know, the whole water cooler conversations that you used to have in office spaces, right? Where you'd stand by the water cooler, trying to get a glass of water, and then you talk about what happened yesterday, like, you know, yeah. what happened on the TV or something. And everybody knew what happened, mm-hmm. like in the 1980s, like at a big show finale or something. Yes, yeah. Right now, like I can talk about a TV show or something else that I would have seen on my feed.
Yeah,
that you have like no idea about, right? So that also is fragmenting and I guess slowly I wouldn't say destroying but slowly fragmenting the social component of it as well. So
yeah, yeah.
from all aspects, if yes. you're a young kid growing up, like you also have very little common ground to form a bond with somebody who has that exact same life as yourself, mm. and then to be able to value that friendship through to decades after, I think it's very difficult right now, right? So
yeah, so it's a big problem, but
more on that video that comes yes. out.
Yeah, you guys will see it. So.
But before, I guess, you know, loneliness kills us, something else might. That's a segue for Peyton.
Yeah, so something might kill us. Falling satellites. The FAA has sounded the alarm on the danger of falling Starlink satellites.
Sorry, go on.
Falling Starlink satellites, really?
Yeah, apparently.
Wow.
SpaceX isn't happy. They're stationed in low Earth orbit, and they're intended to only last 5 years before starting to deorbit. And their expendable nature has a good side, though. They're supposed to burn up entirely on re-entry. But Congress made it public last week that they reckon by 2035 up to 28,000 fragments of Starlink satellites could survive re-entry.
And that's what, like a 61% increase or something? Yeah.
Yeah, the chance of any of those fragments hitting someone is on the ground will rise to 61% each year. But SpaceX denies it.
Well, let's just hope that the testing that was done to say that they burn up in the atmosphere was very robust with a lot of safety factors. Like, if not, I don't know, man. we're stuck.
61% year on year, that's a fair, fair bit of increase. And also, like, I've been seeing a lot of videos of these, I don't know if you've seen them, like the increase of space
junk debris. Yeah,
debris. It's ridiculous. Like, yeah. like you wouldn't think about that as much, but yeah. when visualized, it's actually a lot.
Yeah, it's like the Earth and this rubbish dump just.
but when I guess when you know, like the visual that I see from ISS, for example, International Space Station, I haven't really seen.
As in, like, when you look outside, you don't see anything.
Yeah, yeah. So,
because it's dramatized in those, like, obviously the pieces aren't as big as they show.
Right.
Otherwise, like, one piece would be like a city, like, going right. around. So it's the pieces of space junk may be, you know, the size of
a phone or something.
Yeah, yeah, phone or a laptop or something like that. It's not, yeah. It's
a
not,
huge chunk. Yeah, 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 got it.
Or else, yeah, that would be a very big worry. But, yeah, nevertheless, though, there's a lot of that. And for every satellite that goes up, there's more chances of it hitting something else, and it's just, and then I don't know, with the launch of the whole Starlink satellite system, there's like tens of thousands of satellites that are going up, and never in human history have we seen such an influx of orbiting bodies. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with that.
And there's a Race to the Moon as well, which you can watch on Cold Fusion as well.
Yes, yes.
So, which also means there's this, obviously, you know, the countries are kind of back in terms of trying to go to the space again,
mm-hmm.
which means there's going to be more space junk all the years.
Well, maybe not, though, because they're just trying to get the astronauts there and back. It's not like anything's orbiting us. The astronauts that are going to the moon will orbit for a day, but they're not going to stay there. So I don't think that really factors in, but obviously they have to try and avoid the space junk, which is another issue. So, yeah.
Well, we're towards the end of the episode. One thing, just before we say bye for the day. Remember we talked about that line city that we were talking about maybe last year, which was merely a concept at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it's on its way to being fully built in Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. and it's looking pretty good according to a lot of the people there. It's apparently it's got like everything that we kind of spoke about at the time that we're not going to make it a success. There seems like they have thought all of that out,
right?
And seems like they're going fully ahead with it. So this is actually a view of it.
Funny story. So like I was in a wedding on Friday and I met someone. It was actually the sister of the guy who was getting married, and she just got a job in Saudi Arabia for the new airline that they're starting up. So she's the marketing manager of the whole thing.
Wow.
And she was saying that the line's going to be a big part of it in some way, and just the amount of stuff that's going on in Saudi Arabia right now is quite huge. So I was like, whoa, so the line's happening? And she's like, yeah, it's like, and then you told me now. I was like, okay, so there you go.
Yeah, so, and it's called the NEOM, I think. Did you see the video, Brayden?
I saw the original one.
Yeah, so I think that they just recently released a video of the actual progress of where things are.
Mm.
But yeah, Saudi Arabia is really changing things up over this decade, like in terms of...
I think she was saying that the goal from the prince, is it? Or the king? Prince? He was wanting to have the GDP or the income of Saudi Arabia be 6 times more than Dubai by the end of his... you know, changing of the country. So I was like...
They're also bidding for the World Cup in 2032, I think.
Okay, well,
so, it's probably... Because Australia is also in the race, but after seeing what Saudi Arabia was planning, I don't think Australia has got much of a chance.
And plus, you know, Victorian Premier Dan Andrews fumbling the other one. Where,
oh, yeah, with the Olympics situation.
Yeah, and he just cancelled. It's like the biggest embarrassment.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not go there. Let's not go. Anyway, I think that's it for the show. And we will catch you again soon for the next episode. So thanks for listening and thanks for watching. And next time, my nose will be unblocked. All right, see ya.